Thank you very much, Professor Vattavala. So now, first of all, we pay homage to the Buddha, as well as may you all recite the Namo Tassa to observe five precepts. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Saranagamanam sampunnam Panatipata veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Adinnadana veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Kamesu micchachara veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Surameraya majjapama dattana veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Tisrenena saddhin panchasilam dhammam sadukam surakkhitam katva appamadena sampade tabbam. Yeah, dear Dhamma friends, I welcome all of you for this Poya Day program. So first of all, actually, we like to settle ourselves. You might be from various activities. Now it's a time to take our attention back to the body, so that we are able to relax ourselves and to develop some amount of mindfulness and to regain the, we can say, the inner vigility or the kind of a silence, so that we'll try to get through the mindfulness practice. So may you sit in a comfortable position. Probably you can keep your head straight and close your eyes gently. And you can keep your shoulders in a relaxed position. And you can keep your hands, arms also in a restful position. You can keep your back straight. And again, you can keep your legs also in a relaxed position. Now we are not walking, we are not standing, we are not lying down. We are in a comfortable sitting position. So see whether you can have some sort of a feeling about your body. So there is no any rush, so we have enough time, so we are trying to connect with the body. So the body is a kind of an entrance to the mindfulness practice, and it really helps us to connect with ourselves. We are using our bodies habitually without really comprehending it. without having good connectivity with it. So rather, in this mindfulness practice, various very simple techniques, very simple methods are taking us to very profound understandings. So therefore, we are trying to keep our attention in the body so that we too are able to earth ourselves. So see whether you can feel what I am telling. Your eyes are gently closed and your lips are gently touching, and you are keeping your tongue at the root. You are not pressurizing or thrusting upon the teeth or gums using the tongue. So probably you can have a slight smile. Overall, whole face feeling very relaxed. And your head straight, neck also straight, and there is no any tension. You are not holding the shoulders purposely, effortfully, rather they are in a relaxed position. Your arms are also resting. Probably you can feel how your clothes are touching the body. You can probably feel how the heart vibrates. Probably you can feel how your tummy, your abdomen coming little forward as you are breathing in. And probably you can feel your tummy going back as you are breathing out, rising and falling. So these are very ordinary activities, and they are happening. We are not purposely doing. And you can feel some weight or pressure at your buttocks. And your legs are also relaxed and they are bent. And probably certain parts of your legs may be touching each other. And some parts of your foot also touching the ground or maybe the carpet. So we are able to connect with the body. Now we are not encouraging any thoughts pertaining to the past or any plans related to the future. Rather, we keep our mind in this simple experience. It is so simple and it is quite ordinary. Typically we ignore all these, but now we give some value and try to understand, try to recognize these various feelings, various sensations. If you are feeling little nervous, you can recognize that. If you are feeling little happy, you can recognize that. If you are feeling little tensed, you can recognize that. So all these things happen right now. We are not trying to ignore them. We are not trying to reject them. We have a very broader mind to accept everything. we allow things to happen. And as we have a broader mind, which can accept anything, at the same time it is a beginner's mind, a very gentle mind, a soft mind. We are not thinking about what we have heard, we are not thinking about what we have learned. Rather, we are trying to experience the present moment. Now you can recognize something more prominent in your body. Maybe we'll select in-breath and out-breath. We can keep our attention at the nostril, and we are able to recognize how in-breath happens. We are able to recognize how out-breath happens. And we are just keeping our attention at the nostril. We are not moving inside or moving outside. We are like a gatekeeper. So the breathing in happens. If your mind wanders, probably you can note it, label it as in. As you are experiencing breathing out, you can label it as out. In, out. There is no rush. There is no big thing to do. So we are allowing ourselves to calm down, to release all the tensions, to well connect with our body. So probably you can recognize certain breaths are long, certain breaths are short, and sometimes in-breath may be cool, out-breath may be hot, or in-breath happens in a single nostril, out-breath happens maybe both. Many different ways are there. So we are keeping a clear understanding. We are trying to clearly know what is really happening there. We have a small curiosity to recognize what is really happening there. So we are trying to calm down the mind. We are not encouraging any thoughts related to the past, any thoughts related to the future. But we are trying to enjoy this present moment. So simple, so direct, with a calm mind. I don't need to go after these thoughts. They are not mine. I can simply let them go and come back to the breath. So there's a beginning of the in-breath. It is slowly improving and then it fades away. Then the out-breath happens. There's a slight gap in between. So we are trying to comprehend the whole cycle. back to the sermon now. Professor Latavala, I like to share my screen. Can you make it enable? Professor Latavala, are you there? Right, now it's okay. Fine. Okay, dear dumb friends, so I have taken a different topic today, and so this is maybe some of you are somewhat familiar with it, and sometimes it may be new to you. So solitude and stillness. So it appears like familiar to us, or sometimes not familiar to us. So types of seclusion. Now actually we are living in a kind of a different situation in the whole world, where typically we are allowed to keep a company with all our friends, and to move with our friends, and have a lot of fun, and to move around as we like. So this is the typical situation we are experiencing. But now we have a different situation because of the COVID pandemic. Now we all are restricted to some extent. In Sri Lanka, we all are fairly restricted, and the whole poya day, all of you have to stay at home. So likewise, we are in a way a little restricted, and we have to live in a little solitary life these days. Now when we are doing like that, so we probably have kind of a negative attitude towards that, because we can't move with our friends, we can't go to our friend's house, say we can't go to a party, or you can't enjoy yourself with various other places, or probably you can't meet your colleagues, you can't visit your relatives, you can't even go to your company or organization where you are working, and maybe you are doing some distant working, or maybe you are doing distant learning, you can't go to the college. So likewise, we are in a different situation, and therefore we probably have looked at in a more negative way, that I am restricted, why can't I go out, I am now frustrated, every day I have to look at the same people, I can't enjoy with others. So all these complaints are with us. Now when it comes to the Dhamma, so Buddha talks about this solitude. So rather than we feel lonely, so is there a way to look at it in a different way? Look at it in a different manner. So when we get a chance to be alone, so rather than trying to get rid of it and immediately go for some sort of a companionship, are we able to have some mechanism to improve ourselves using such solitude? So this is a kind of a method that we can look at today, especially since all of we are somewhat restricted. I mean, purposely, or I mean the sense, even though we like it or not, we have to stay at home sometimes. So is it possible for us to use it properly into our own advantage? So this is where I try to pay your attention. And therefore Buddha talks about three levels of solitude. One is Kaya Viveka, having the bodily solitude, being alone. And then Chitta Viveka, and we'll discuss it later. And again Upadhi Viveka, that also we'll discuss later. Now, when we are talking like this, so there are certain misconceptions. So we have to think of. Say sometimes we think when someone is alone, so we can interpret him as he is not friendly with others. So probably he is not sensitive to others' various issues. So he is simply taking care of himself, minding his own business, and not friendly, and try to be alone, and probably he might be depressed. So this is the kind of an attitude we have when we see someone is alone. So he is not friendly, he is not open-hearted, so that's why he is alone. So likewise, we have kind of a idea or kind of a preconceived idea when we are looking someone is alone. So when we are coming to the Buddhist perspective, so we have to look at it in a different manner. So there may be certain people who are alone, but they are not really unfriendly. They may be really friendly, and they are not quite insensitive, but they are quite sensitive, and they may also have a lot of friends, and he may be really in a positive atmosphere, positive mood instead of depression. So likewise, we have to clarify these kinds of typical notions we have. And when it comes to some aspects of mental solitude, so we can talk about some benefits. Say, if you are able to be alone for some time, then you have some time to have kind of an introspection. You can feel yourself. When you are in a team, when you are with a lot of friends, you are moving around always with a lot of people, then you don't have that touch. And when you are alone, you have some sort of solidarity. So you feel that you are confident. And again, you feel independent. You don't need to really depend on all the others for your happiness. And once you are alone, you can meditate. You can be mindful. Because less disturbances. Others are not coming and bugging you. So therefore, you have some time to be with yourself. And when you are feeling confident, and you don't need someone else to approve. Sometimes we have a kind of a thought pattern that we always think how another person may look at us, how another person have a view about me. So I am trying to correct it. So those kinds of very subtle thoughts may not be necessary to entertain when you are feeling confident that you are doing good, you are confident, and you are independent, and then you are not necessary to show off because there are no any others to show yourself, but you are alone. And on the other hand, so when you are alone, is your mind also alone? Or is it talking? You probably have seen that many people, when they are spending their time in alone, say they are coming for some vacation, so they take a book with them, they may take a laptop with them, they may take a lot of other things, maybe some food. So continuously they are eating, or continuously they are reading, continuously they are going through a newspaper, or maybe watching the news in the TV. So are they really alone? So are they really relaxed? So is it the proper way of spending our vacation? And on the other hand, when we are alone, probably we can cut off various social media and bombarding of a lot of news. So all these are again possible. And on the other hand, even when you are with many people, if you have the capacity to maintain some solitude, even amidst a gathering, amidst a lot of crowd, you can have your center of awareness. So these are some advanced features in a way, we can say like that. And there are various other people who are having some negative influence, but still you are capable of maintaining yourself. Kind of a solidarity is there. And you can be happy within. So these are certain aspects that we can talk when we are discussing this kind of a solitude. So now we can change our perspective that rather than I am feeling lonely, please come to join with me. So rather than that kind of a attitude, now I am alone. I am in a more confident situation. Let me feel myself. Let me look at myself. Let me have a kind of an introspection. Let me try to understand myself. How this body works. How various feelings are happening. So what are the various emotions which I am going through? Are there any sort of negative habitual tendencies which I am continuously getting victimized? So those are certain aspects that we can think of. Now first of all, we have to have some amount of Kaya Viveka for this. So Kaya Viveka is something that we all can understand. So we go away from our companionship with our friends or whoever else. So I am just trying to be alone. So this is the physical solitude, Kaya Viveka, so that we all can understand. Suppose if you are at your home, probably you can have that. Maybe you are going to your own room or you are going under a tree in your garden. So you have some seclusion. And then when it comes to Samadhi, meditation, so that is where we can enjoy Chitta Viveka. That is another level. So you can understand that there are various thoughts going on and on in the mind. Even though you are alone, free from others, but still mind is talking. Mind is constantly chattering. Again and again various lustful thoughts are coming. Again and again various angry thoughts are coming. So how to calm them down? So if you are able to calm down those kinds of thoughts, so that is called Chitta Viveka. So you have some calmness. You have some, say, concentration. So mind is also now somewhat alone. But then we are coming to a more deep aspect. So that is where we can come across the vipassana side, that is something called Upadhi Viveka. So this is the area that we like to discuss more, and that is where more and more methods are available which we can explore. Are we able to apply or make use of them for our own benefit? So let's start from something simple. Suppose you are doing some sort of a walking meditation. So you are trying to mindfully walk. And we are, say for example, you are going to a walking path or you are going to a corridor. And when your left foot is touching the ground, you are trying to keep your attention there. When your right foot is touching the ground, you are trying to keep your attention there. Very simple. But your mind is talking. Your mind is jumping to the past, jumping to the future. So you are still not successful. But anyway, you are continuing. Then and there you get a chance to keep your attention on the left foot. To keep your attention on the right foot. So you are trying to break that vicious cycle. So continuously mind being pulled to the past and the future. It's a monkey mind. But you are trying to break that vicious cycle and try to keep your attention onto the foot. So it's a very simple exercise. But what happens as you are progressing is where you are able to maintain for few steps continuously. Suppose for 7 steps, now you are able to keep your attention continuously for this walking. Now what happens to that inner chatter during that period? So it has somewhat calmed down. It has somewhat weakened. Now again and again you are continuing it. then you are able to walk for 10 steps, 20 steps. And even when you are turning back, still you are able to maintain that mindfulness. And on again coming back, still you are able to maintain that mindfulness. So this is where slowly we are growing mindfulness. And as we are growing mindfulness, now you can understand, okay, there is a quality in the mind which I can grow, which I can improve. Where continuously the walking happens, I can synchronize my attention with that bodily activity. So the mental activity and the bodily activity is fairly synchronized. They are in harmony. So as you are continuing like this, now there is another level that Buddha asks us to do. That is where we are trying to comprehend that experience. We are not just satisfied with the mindfulness. Now we are trying to keep clear comprehension into the picture. Where when your foot is touching the ground, really what is happening there? So you have some curiosity. So what are the sensations available? At the beginning, you only could know maybe hardness. How about knowing various other qualities? It may be softness, it may be heaviness, it may be lightness, it may be heat, it may be cold, it may be the movement. So likewise, these are very primordial qualities. This is not something we create through our mind. So typically what happens is we conceptually create in our mind. I have a picture that I am walking, I am wearing clothes, I am wearing shoes, I am on this place. So all these are in a way a lot of perceptions we have. But in the simple mindfulness activities, we are trying to let go of all these unnecessary details. A lot of conventional information. While letting them go, we are trying to comprehend more clearly about what we really feel at this very moment. So for that, actually, we don't even need a language. To that level, it is so direct. Suppose your foot is touching the ground, even now. Say your foot is touching the ground and you can feel it. You can feel that you have a kind of a pressure there. Probably if you are keeping your foot on a carpet, it may be smooth. You can recognize it. So likewise, now I am trying to clearly comprehend that situation. So as we are improving in this side, now not only clear comprehension, now it is like we are improving the resolution of the picture. Say now you can even understand, okay, the foot, maybe the heel touches the first, okay, then the middle, then the toes. So likewise, there are some subtle details in this touching. Now we are going for such kind of clear comprehension. We are trying to understand this whole process. Now I am not thinking about where I am. Now I am not thinking about what is the name of the leg or where it is touching. Those names are not necessary. And mind is quite aimed at that place and trying to clearly understand the process. Now this is where various insights are possible, because the mind has the clarity. Because the mind is not going to the past and the future and going for any kind of conceptual proliferation. Rather, it is a very silent mind. It is a mind which is secluded. It is a mind which is enjoying that solitude. Say, for example, if you have seen a kind of a picture because your eyes are open, now you are not going after it. You are not encouraging that kind of thinking. If certain sounds are heard, again you are not going after that. even those sounds are heard, because you are fairly cutting off those and you are finding your seclusion, your solitude, and you are now with the body. So the whole attention is well concentrated to the body. You are very alone. Now, when such capacity is available in the mind, so a lot of insights are possible, because mind has its clarity, proper aim, proper concentration, and again, you are again and again trying to comprehend the process. So that leads to further and further understanding about the situation. So probably you can understand, sir, the whole body is walking like a paddling, or you are biking, or you are moving like a say roller, a wheel, whatever it is. So you have a different perspective now. Previously you have the idea, okay, I am so and so, now I am doing walking meditation, I am at this place. So all that information was with you, that personality was with you, but now things have changed. So you have simplified your experience, but more deeply, more profoundly, you are able to understand what is really going on. And more you do this, so you may understand, okay, these are various element characteristics manifesting again and again. So this whole experience is nothing but various elements. And you are able to apply it even to the outside. Say, not only to yourself, but inferentially you can understand, so, okay, other people, even though when they are walking, they also may experience the same thing what I am experiencing right now. Similarly, the outside, all the physical atmosphere, what they have is the same kind of a movement, this kind of a motion, this kind of hardness, softness. So this is where you are in a way broadening your understanding. First, you got certain insights your own, and then you are broadening it, you are enhancing it. And probably you can use inferential knowledge for this. So what happens as you are continuing like this? Now that personality view has somewhat calmed down, so there is no any huge ego right now, and there is no any hindrances, and there is no inner chatter. And at the same time, as you are continuing like this, so you get a different perspective. So rather than you feeling that I am so and so, I am this, I am that, so you feel that all these experiences are nothing but elements. So what happens? So that actually helps to have a kind of a dispassionate perspective, dispassionate attitude. So now everything happens like a flux. So whatever you see, you are not interested. Whatever you hear, you are not that interested. Mind does not go after that. Whatever you are feeling, you are not going after that. Even certain slight thoughts coming in your mind, you are not going after that. So more solitude is there now. So you have gained more solitude. So you are now confident. So the mind has become somewhat solid in a way. So it is not getting distracted. It is not getting pulled away from its own stillness. Now it is growing its stillness. It's growing its kind of a confidence. Now, as you are moving like that, so other insights are also possible. Say you understand how fragile these all experiences are, how transient they are, how constantly arising and passing they are. And from this kind of a process, can I have something lasting happiness? Can this process make me happy forever, or even for a short period of time? So is there any ongoing soul or a person in this process? So these are kind of questions probably coming from the mind even. And you are now in a kind of investigation. So this is how actually the wisdom starts to develop. We started with that clear comprehension, but slowly it paves the way to the development of the wisdom. Now there's an important point that we can remember, that Buddha says, when there is clear understanding, when there is a knowing, it's invariable understanding, it's in a way inevitable result, is that you have kind of a dispassion. Because when you have kind of ignorance, then you have kind of an attachment. On the other hand, when there is understanding, wisdom, Buddha says, dispassion and letting go is the inevitable result. Now mind does not want to hold anything. Because the mind may feel somewhat heavy when it is holding something. Somewhat blocked, burdened, and somewhat disturbed when it is holding, grasping something. Now what happens? Now mind starts to let go. So it's a natural effect. It is not that you are forcefully letting go. You are forcefully leaving things. Rather, mind simply leave aside things. And when he is leaving aside all these unnecessary things, now more and more mind finds its solidarity. It becomes more alone, more solitude. And where it is now going to stay? Where is it now going to establish? That is something that we can again think of. Now mind has lost the, in a way, interest of various phenomena, and again it doesn't have any place to stay. So therefore what happens, it slowly finds its own way of living. So Buddha beautifully explains it as, it is not associating anything, not grasping anything, but at the same time, it is having its own kind of a solitude. It is quite confident now. It doesn't need someone else's help in a way. Say for example, I am giving you a small example. Say, suppose, say airplane. So it is airplane is catching up momentum on the runway. Suppose it is now trying to take off. When an airplane is trying to take off, they may address, they may announce that you have to say bind yourself, put the seat belt, be prepared, and they switch off the lights. So likewise, there are kind of a momentum is now catching up. Now it is speeding up, going on in the runway. And then ultimately, it takes off. Once it is taken off, do you think that it needs more again the runway? Not necessary, because the necessary momentum is already built up. Now it doesn't require the runway, because the necessary momentum has already with it. Now it is on the air. So similarly, something like that happens in the mind. It was associating so many things, but now it has its own solitude. It is capable of being alone. So this is how that Buddha mentioned that the mind is finding its own solitude. It has found its kind of home. Now, this kind of happiness, this kind of aloneness is not negative. So it is more rich. And this kind of aloneness, solitude, is helping you to recognize inner tendencies. So what are the habits this mind being moving along with? Is it really alone? Are there any coloring? Are there any conditioning in the mind? So this is something that further investigation sort of reveals. Because the mind is now fairly clean and fairly clear and free from any inner chatter and fairly strong in the other sense. Now it can actually see what are the disturbances coming from. Where again I am losing the solitude. Where again the mind get disturbed. So what are the inner habitual tendencies? So this is how now the solitude is turning to a more into a wisdom. So therefore, so this sort of a solitude is something that Buddha has appreciated. So there is a beautiful story during the Buddha's time that there was one monk. He does everything alone. He does not like to take anyone's companionship. He is going on arms round alone. If he has to wash a robe, he is doing it alone. While at the, say, monastery, he is not having any friends. So he entertained that kind of aloneness. So he becomes somewhat popular on his practice. And while Buddha is having a conversation with him, Buddha didn't really approve it. Rather, Buddha mentioned, so there are better solitude. There are more, say, sublime solitude. That is where your mind is free from any defilements. So your mind is now not associating those lust, hatred, delusion, envious, and all these different kinds of defilements. So there you have the solitude. And it is not jumping to the past, future. Now it is possible to maintain in the presence. So that is a more higher solitude. So therefore Buddha gave a kind of a honorific title for that kind of a solitude. It is called Baddhe Karatta. So it's a more supreme kind of solitude, where the mind is free from any lust, any craving. You know, there's a beautiful verse by the Buddha, where Buddha mentioned, Tanha dutiyo puriso diga maddhana sansaram. Itta bhava anyata bhavam sansaram nati vattati. Now we may think that I have a companion, I have a partner, I have a friend. So likewise we are usually referring ourselves. So because we think that my wife is my partner, my husband is my partner, my best friend is my partner. So likewise we are having that kind of a understanding. But according to the Buddha, they are not the real partner in this whole samsaric journey. Who is the partner? So that is nothing but craving. Tanha dutiyo puriso. So Buddha mentioned, so the craving is the partner, companion that we are continuously keeping with ourselves. So therefore, even you are physically alone, till you have craving operating in the mind, then you can't say that you are really alone. Because the craving is there. It is always bugging you, always disturbing you, always asking you something, always dictating you. Because it is not satisfied. Always in a kind of an unsatisfied mood. Because the craving is continuously disturbing. So if you have to really enjoy solitude, that is where the craving also has to be eliminated. So the mind is now gaining kind of a capacity to free the mind from various defilements, free the mind from craving, free from any kind of even sort of associations, not associating with sounds, not associating with sights, not associating with various smells, etc. But it doesn't mean it can't comprehend. It can know what is happening. So this is something very beautiful that Buddha explained, how that kind of mind is enjoying a kind of a stillness. Because we think typically the mind is only still when it is bound to something. But on the opposite, here, since mind is not bound to anything, as a result of that, now the mind has become still. So there's a complete difference. Say for example, if you are familiar with, say, Samatha meditation, so that is where you are trying to bind your mind with some object, something. Say you are practicing Anapanasati. Say you are trying to bind your mind with in-breath and out-breath, or with a kind of a concentration sign. But here on the opposite, in the Upadhi Viveka, in the Vipassana, we have a completely different approach, where mind has become still because it is not bound to anything. So there's a significant difference. Now that is the kind of a noble kind of a solitude, kind of a stillness that Buddha has really appreciated. So it doesn't mean that mind is not friendly. So that mind is more friendly, we can say. Because it understands how others' minds are getting constantly disturbed, how they are being constantly bombarded with various requests coming through the craving. They have no any peace in their minds. So there's a kind of a compassion available in that kind of a mind. So a mind which is completely has become still, enjoying sort of a higher kind of solitude. So therefore, it can has its own kind of a compassion. So that is where we say the Buddha has his wisdom as well as the supreme compassion. Panya and Karuna. So Buddha, the whole life, is a representation of wisdom and the compassion. So therefore you can understand, so this kind of solitude what we are talking in the Buddhism, especially in the Vipassana, is more profound, is more advanced, we can say. And it is having more stability. Now such mind is not subjected to kind of ups and downs. It can withstand vicissitudes of the life because it has found its home. It has found its, solidarity. So these are certain aspects we can think of when it comes to solitude. So this is something that I like to share with you. And you can refer various other places I have mentioned here. That Buddha mentioned, Hatha Sangyato Pada Sangyato Vachaya Sangyato Sangyatuttamo Ajjattarato Samahito Eko Santusito Tamahubiku. So Buddha gave a kind of a definition of a person who really follows his path. So he says, so he is restraining in his hands, in his legs, basically overall in his body. And he is restrained in his words. Ajjattarato samahito. So he has his kind of a concentration, stillness, collectedness of the mind. And internally he is happy. Now this is something that some people can't understand. So when you are having such kind of a situation, how one feels happy? Ajjattarato, internally he is happy. Eko santusito, being alone he is happy. Eko indicates he is a single person in a way, we can say. Being alone, he is happy. Santusito, tamahu bhikkhu. He is a person, a real person who, a follower of the Buddha. And on the other hand, anissito na chalati, nissito cha upadhyam. Now, whenever there is some sort of an association, there is some sort of a grasping. There is some sort of a dependency. So when the dependency is there, so always fluctuations are possible because the other party is very vulnerable. So you can't maintain your happiness because the other party is very vulnerable, uncertain. So you also lose your happiness. But on the other hand, anisito na chalati. So when there is no any kind of an association, so you become fairly firm. So this is something that we have to take in a positive perspective. So these are certain, say, very interesting points that Buddha highlights related to this aloneness, this solitude, this stillness, which are coming according to the Buddha's teaching, or where the Buddha is emphasizing. And that is something that Buddha has appreciated. So if you are able to maintain a mind which is not jumping to the past and the future and continuously proliferating, there you have some amount of solitude. You are able to establish yourself in the present. And if you are able to maintain a mind free from craving, you are not a person, a victim of the craving. So there you have a good solitude. So these are certain areas that we can think of in this today's Poson Day, because today we have got the message of the Buddha. So the Buddha's teaching have come to the Sri Lanka a day like today. So Buddha's teaching indicates to this kind of a direction. So we should try ourselves, therefore, to understand, to experience such kind of a direction as much as possible. So with that request, that kind of invitation, I like to conclude the Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Venerable, I think Venerable has given a full details of it. I think Dipal is there, who is really very, very conversant on the mindfulness. Dipal, would you like to ask any questions or any comments that you have?
Thank you, Professor Pante. It was quite enlightening, and as always has been. I would like you to elaborate a little bit. Now, at the beginning you explained how the stillness, once it gets developed, and two questions. One is, do you have to consciously move from the stillness to inquiring as to what is happening? Then you need to know how to do it. That's the first question. And second point is, the very important point that you mentioned is, when we try to find happiness by depending ourselves on things which are not permanent, which we have no control over, when they change, obviously the happiness also change. But on the other hand, when the requirements are eliminated or no more, then there is a natural state of mind, which is the natural state, which is absolutely free. So to come to that, from that state of stillness that you experience in practicing, for example, Anapanasati, should you consciously move and explore, or is it a natural result that can happen by deepening your stillness, which is beyond words?
So actually, it's an interesting question. So basically, suppose you are able to gain some amount of stillness. Say you are able to keep your attention on the breath. So that is, in a way, at one level, that mind has concentrated. Mind has, in a way, absorbed to the breath. So that is in a way the Chitta Viveka, the second level that Buddha discussed, what we are gaining through the Samatha meditation, where your mind is somewhat locked with the phenomena. So it is in sync with the phenomena. So this is also a possibility now. That is where we discuss on the jhana, where the mind get absorbed to some sort of a phenomena. But on the other hand, here, so in that sense, so if you want to really reflect, you have to come out of that. Because you are, while being absorbed to it, you can't move. So you are very much like locked. But on the other hand, in the vipassana, so you have the freedom to move. So because there is no any kind of a hook, there is no any kind of an attachment, there is no any kind of an association, so the mind is enjoying kind of a freedom. So this is a kind of an interesting phenomena. Say, the mind is not pulled to the sights, mind is not pulled to the sounds, and etc. As a result, mind has become free, and there is no way to move. So in that sense, so if there is a movement happen, then you can actually investigate why this movement has happened. Because on the other hand, logically, if there is no craving at all, then there can't be any movement. What do you say? because if the craving is the one pulling, because if there is no craving at all, then the mind should be utterly still.
Utterly still.
Yes. So while you are trying to enjoy stillness, you can't do it actually. Now I am actually explaining it like you can do it, but really when you are going to the practice, you can only for a short period this can maintain, because the inner urge sometimes coming and disturb you. Try to do something, because suppose you are able to maintain kind of a solitude for 5 minutes, then kind of an inner urge coming and telling you, what is this? This is really boring. This is kind of quite a monotony. Try to do something. Let's listen to Dhamma. Or let's go for a kind of a ride. Let's watch a movie. Because you can't really maintain that. There is an inner urge coming sometimes. So this is where the sankhara come into the picture. So where kind of a fabrication is always internally, we are kind of trying to pull us. Always we are suffering from some sort of doing syndrome. That we can't simply stay quiet. So we can't simply enjoy that simplicity. So that is where the problem. So theoretically we can say, okay, if there is no problem, the mind has to be completely still, completely satisfied, contented. So that is something that we have to enjoy. But as you said, as you pointed out, here we don't need to really do anything. It's a matter of trying to maintain it. But because of the inner defilements, we can't do it. So again and again the pulling happens. Distractions happen. So as it is happening now, you can really recognize why it has happened. So this movement is in a way inevitable till we have defilements. So it is, therefore in the vipassana approach, we don't need to purposely look at it. Rather, we can allow the mind to enjoy freedom, but it can't because of this pulling. Then we can investigate why that pulling has happened. Yeah. Professor, you have something? Yeah.
Bhante, there are question to Venerable. It says, Bhante, please explain the meaning of Upadhi.
No, it is not Upadhi. That professor may know Upadhi very well, more than me. So that is called Upadhi. Upadhi.
Upadhi.
Yeah. So that is where actually we have a lot of things considering as me, belongs to myself. Say for example, say you have a house, so it belongs to me. So I have kind of education, so it belongs to me. I have a title, it belongs to me. So I have a kind of a reputation, it belongs to me. I have a lot of wealth, it belongs to me. So these are certain parameters we are using to define ourselves. This is how we are making a self. So all these things are coming under the term of upadhi. We can call them as assets, acquisitions. We can interpret like that. So using them, actually, we are making a self. Yeah.
There's another question. Venerable Thero, could you explain how Samatha Bhavana gets developed to Vipassana? Is it necessary to practice Anapana Sati and Sakmana Bhavana for a period of time to move on to Vipassana? Does it depend on individuals?
Yeah, it depends on individual, we can say, because various approaches are there. So if you already conducted Samatha meditation, if you already have some amount of concentration with yourself, then probably you can move towards the Vipassana. So it is, I mean, the turning is very, gentle. I mean, it is not a huge difference. It is not a complete difference. Rather than simply keeping your mind just absorbed to something, now you start to investigate that. So that is the key point here. So rather than simply satisfied with absorbed or concentrated to an object, rather than just being idle there, just being enjoying that companionship, association, now you are trying to investigate how this object or this phenomena is behaving. So this is how we are turning towards the investigation, that is the Vipassana, moving more towards the development of the wisdom. And therefore, in order to do that, you need to have some amount of concentration. So, therefore, that is possible. And some people actually do it, parallelly. Say, they do some amount of practice of Samatha as well as they do practice of Vipassana. And some actually, say, Anapanasati, they practice to some extent and then they start to observe various phenomena available throughout the body. So various approaches are there. It is not a single approach. So it depends on the person. Yeah.
Next question is, Bande, when our mind is drawn to an object, should we think about it? Then we lose the present moment. If we do not think, we don't learn. What is the best approach?
Yeah, if the mind has drawn to something, suppose, say you were enjoying kind of a seclusion, as we discussed with Deepal. So mind was quite happy, quite contented, and in a kind of a solitude, stillness. But now it has moved to something. So, and you can actually recognize why this movement happens. Is it due to kind of a craving? Is it due to sign of a, say, agitation in the mind? Is the mind has become restless? So these are certain aspects you can, it is not that you are thinking in a way that you may understand. Say, for example, while you are on a walking path, so there was nothing much attractive at that time. Now assume that immediately a beautiful butterfly has come. Now immediately you are being pulled to that. You are being attracted to that butterfly. So you can understand, okay, there is a kind of a attraction, there's a kind of a craving here. So my mind still like to enjoy, still like to associate this kind of a beauty. So this is something that you can understand. Yeah.
There is another question. I try my best to concentrate and meditate, but my mind is always jumping to past and future, having monkey mind. Request some practical advices to which I can adhere.
Yeah, one option is that you can incorporate noting. Say, for example, if you are practicing in-breath and out-breath, so constantly the mind behaves like a monkey mind. So one option is that you are incorporating noting, where when you experience in-breath, you note it as in. When you are experiencing out-breath, you note it as out. Kind of a very simple technique. So this, in a way, confirming the experience mentally. Say you are going through some physical experience, that is the knowing of the breath, in breath, and at that time you do some sort of a mental confirmation as well. So this is helping lot of people where, I mean, since the purposely you do this kind of a confirmation, mental noting, that jumping side loosens its strength. So it weakens actually. And more the mental power being directed to the necessary process. So that is the in-breath and out-breath that you are trying to be mindful of that. So mentally, purposely, you are confirming, okay, this is in, this is in-breath, this is out-breath, this is in-breath, this is out-breath. So this noting is a really beautiful technique, very important technique. On the other hand, you can incorporate, say for example, say counting also. I mean, say when in-breath and out-breath happens, so you are counting it as one. When next in-breath and out-breath happens, you can count it as two. When next in-breath and out-breath happen, you can count it as three. So likewise, this counting techniques is also possible. You don't need to go very far. You can stop at 10. Suppose if your mind getting distracted in between, again, you can come back to zero, come back to one, and you can again restart. So these are small techniques, few techniques that you can use so that you can minimize distractions. And again, you can practice walking meditation before coming to the sitting. So that would be really helpful to develop mindfulness and regain or take that mindfulness to the sitting session. Yeah.
There's a question from Anuja Vijayasekhar. How do you proceed to this level with Anapanasati?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so basically, so that is where Buddha mentioned, so you can develop Anapanasati in a way to develop Kayanupassana. Say, you do Kayanupassana through Anapanasati. So, if you refer Anapanasati Sutta, so that is how Buddha explained. Say, when you know the whether the breath is long, short, whether it is the beginning, the middle, end, and all these things, in a way you are comprehending the qualities of the body. You are, in a way, investigating some physical phenomena. On the other hand, you can look at them that you are investigating the characteristics of various elements. Now, even through Kayanupassana, Buddha says it is possible to have such a situation where as you do this investigation, more and more the wisdom start to grow, and probably you can even comprehend it is not a single breath. It consists of series of in-breaths. It is not a single out-breath. It consists of series of out-breaths. So this is where the clear comprehension becomes so increased, we can say. And even such single minute in-breath has its very fragile nature. It has very short life. So it's constantly arising and passing away. So this is where slowly, even through Anapanasati, you are moving towards the Vipassana. Suppose, if you are able to constantly see how this very subtle, minute in-breaths and out-breaths are constantly arising and passing away, so then the mind can't establish itself there because it is so transient, so inconstant. So the mind can't comprehend any kind of a sign, any kind of a mark of this a very rapid process. As a result of that, mind can become free. So this is where sometimes in Dhamma it is mentioned, say the mind is unable to find signs in order to establish. So then the mind becomes free by becoming signless, animitta. By becoming signless, mind becomes free. So likewise, there are many different ways. And on the other hand, suppose you are going towards the say Vedana, various feelings. The same situation can happen. Suppose you are observing various thoughts. So you are allowing the thoughts to come and go. It is not that you are restricting thoughts. You allow the thoughts to come and go. But you are not entertaining it. You are not sort of promoting it. So the thoughts become weaker and weaker. They are, you may understand, they also have the nature to come and go. So as you are, in a way, improving yourself like that, improving wisdom like that, So the thoughts become weaker and weaker, they start to fade away. So mind can comprehend that thoughts are not solid. They are not closely bound. So they have some sort of a gaps. There are certain gaps in between thoughts. As you are further improving, probably you can understand, okay, these gaps are now further and further increasing. And the thoughts become less and less. So the mind become kind of enjoying some sort of a spaciousness. Through that also you can get into, so this kind of what we can say, the kind of stillness or freedom is possible. So many different ways Buddha has mentioned.
There is a question from Kusum. Avasarai Swamin Mahan, sir, please indicate the best way to start training mindfulness.
So there is no any such best stage. This is the right... Sorry?
Best age.
Best age. Oh.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you are already old, please start now itself. And actually our teacher, Bhante Dhammajiva, says, I mean, even very small children can do it. And they are really, I mean, happily doing it. Now, actually, Bhante Dhammajiva has started that Satipasana movement. And even the great 4 children, great 3 children, actually they are practicing it. So there is no any such kind of age difference. You can say, I mean, for a very really infants they can't do it, you can say, which is obvious. But say great 4 children definitely can do it. They are onwards, anyone can do it. Yes.
So we'll take the last question. There are one or two, but we have more time for that. Shirir and Silva, if stillness enriches vipassana to a higher level, how can he or she does his vipassana further and further?
So that is what actually I try to explain to Deepal.
Same thing.
Yeah, same thing. It is not that you need to purposely do something. On the other hand, it's a matter of trying to maintain such a effortless kind of a stillness. That previously what you are enjoying is kind of an effortful. But now you are loosening that effort and you are trying to bring your mind to the surface, or you are not encouraging kind of a deep concentration, rather you are loosening the concentration so that you are having kind of an effortless situation that you can't actually maintain because of the defilements. Then you are able to understand various defilements. So as you are weakening defilements, on the other hand, you are able to maintain such solitude more easily. So that way also we can understand. Yeah.
I think we will time is up.
Yeah. Sure.
So thank you very much, and very much appreciate the detailed manner in which Venerable went into all these different areas, especially the meditation program and then the Dhamma program. And of course, it's really on the mindfulness and the benefits of mental solitude, which I'm sure would have helped all our Dhamma friends. So before we conclude, I will invite Mr. Kamal Nilaveda to give the vote of thanks to the Venerable Thero for Dhamma Desana. And thereafter, Venerable Thero to give the proceeds to all of us. Kamal.
Okay, thank you, Dhamma. So, Venerable, I'm the Dhamma Thero. It was, I think, our second time to have the honor of listening to you in our Dhamma Desana program. Today's program was very, very interesting because solitude and stillness, a Buddhist perspective, it is a very useful aspect to our daily lives. And I think it was so interesting, and that reflected in the number of questions asked. So it was very, very, very nice. Thank you very much, Venerable Thero. And also, this is something which we all need. And today we had over 192 participants listening to you from worldwide, all the Dhamma friends. And also that's a great achievement for us and for Professor Vatavala, because we are sharing the Buddha's Dhamma messages worldwide. through Zoom during this COVID pandemic. So thank you very much, Venerable, and I want to thank all our Dhamma friends from all over the world for joining us. And lastly, I want to thank Professor Lakshman Vatavala for his untiring efforts to organize the Dhamma Desana programs on Zoom in such a methodical and professional way. Thank you very much. Thank you to all. Sadhu.
Thank you, Kamal. Venerable, we are very thankful and much merit to Venerable. Venerable can kindly give blessings to the departed and also to our Dhamma friends who have been partaking at this Dhamma Sabha.
Yeah. So, in order to wind up the session, so we can recollect that we were practicing the Dhamma and we were observing the precepts, and again spend a couple of minutes in practicing meditation, mindfulness, and again listen to Dhamma and again participate in an interesting discussion. And this way we have accumulated a lot of merits. Let's share these merits with all the past relatives, and let's share these merits with all the celestial beings, and again let's share these merits with whoever in need of merits. And again we wish that may all these merits help us also to be free from suffering and to be free from the whole samsara. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu. Tiruvan sarnai.
Much merit to you. Venerable, I think as we said earlier, we are very, very grateful for sparing the valuable time, especially on this special day, Poson Full Moon Poe Day, because we had long session, but this session really cooled us down and our mind was all coming together. So we pay much credit to you.
Yeah, thank you very much for participation, and thank you for inviting me, Professor Vatavala. So I enjoyed your companionship and all the participants and their keen attention. And thank you very much. Teruvan Saranai.